Good morning. Good Erev Shabbos, or good Erev Yontif. I know that this morning, Hoshana Rabbah, is a difficult time to have a shiur, not really ideal, given the length of davening and the loss of the morning time to that. But I thought it would be important to share some of the Maharals on Parshas Vizosa Bracha, if only for the reason that Vizosa Bracha is probably the most often laned Parsha of the year, and it's also the Parsha that people learn the least, ironically, because it takes place over Simchas Torah, and people don't really take the time to sit down and prepare it. If they do Shnai Mikra, it's a quick rush to job. And there's not so many Divrei Torah set over because it's over Yantif, and the Divrei Torah and the Drashas are usually Yantif focused. There's a lot to learn, obviously, at every section of Torah. And here, as much as it's not neglected in terms of laning, it is neglected in terms of the content that we know and that we give over. So I thought it'd be a good opportunity to spend just a little bit of time. If you look on the sheets, you'll find two Maharals or two parts of the Parsha that I want to focus on through the lens of the Maharal from Parshas Vizosa Bracha. Note the obvious, the elephant in the room, the psukim in Parshas Vizosa Bracha, Eish Das Lamo, Har Paran, all of those psukim describe the concept of HaKadosh Baruch Hu going to the other nations. Rashi fills it in for us and offering them the Torah, and then us accepting the Torah, ultimately him choosing us for Matan Torah. The Maharal does have comments in Gur Aryeh, as well as in many in Tiferes Yisrael and elsewhere, about that Maimar Chazal, about HaKadosh Baruch Hu circling to all the nations and offering them the Torah, and ultimately landing on us, and what that means in terms of the Bechira of Klal Yisrael, and what that means in terms of the ultimate Shidduch of Klal Yisrael and the Torah that couldn't have been replaced by anyone else, any other nation, and that would obviously be very apropos for our Parsha as well as for our Yontif that is upcoming, but I elected to talk about two less obvious choices of Maharal. The other two are easy to look up and should be looked up, and maybe if we have time, we'll share them another time. So if you look in source number one, the first section, Madregas Moshe Rabbeinu. So the Psukim in Parsha, in the beginning, tell us, Vayal Moshe, Me Arvos Moav, it's not in the very beginning of the Parsha, sorry, but it's in the second parak appearing in the Parsha. Vayal Moshe Me Arvos Moav, El Har Nevo Rosh HaPizgah, Shal Pnei Yerechov, Vayareihu Hashem, Es Kol Ha'aretz, Es HaGilad Ad Don. So Moshe Rabbeinu ascended, Vayal, he ascended Me Arvos Moav, from Arvos Moav, and up to the mountain Har Nevo, to the heights of the mountain, and he had a view of, from there, of the entirety of Eretz Yisrael. Rashi here comments to me, Arvos Moav El Har Nevo. He went from Arvos Moav up to Har Nevo. Kama Ma'alos Hayu. It was multiple steps. There were many levels that he had to ascend in order to get to the top. Upsa'an Moshe B'Psia Achas. And Moshe Rabbeinu ascended all of those steps. He rose above all of those Milos. He climbed all of those levels B'Psia Achas in one step. In one swift move, he was able to conquer all of those levels and climb the entirety of the mountain in one step, kivyachol. So the Maharal here in Gur Aryeh, first of all, comments on the concept of Me Arvos Moav, that why did the Torah have to tell us where Moshe Rabbeinu was going from? We know where he was coming from. But then he says, Rashi makes this comment, that Psa'an B'Psia Achas, that he ascended all of those levels, climbed all of the stairs, as it were, in one fell swoop, in one single step. So what's the point of teaching us that? Who cares? What does that mean? What's the significance of that statement? V'lama psan b'psia achas, in the second line in the Gur Aryeh over here, why did he have to ascend all of those levels in one step? What does that mean? Aval yesh ladas, says the Maharal, now we're in the bold. Ki davar ze mora al hamadrega hagadola shay lemoshe la'achar misasam. What the Maharal says here is that this is teaching us something significant about the level that was attained, the heights which Moshe Rabbeinu reached in his lifetime. I'm aware that the Maharal here says, La'achar misaso. That sounds like he's talking about after the death of Moshe Rabbeinu, that until his death he didn't reach those heights, but we'll see in the other sources soon, B'li Neder Mirtz Hashem, that it's quite obvious that the Maharal does not mean after he dies, after his decease. Rather, the Maharal means at the end of his life, meaning by the end of his life, by the time of his death, he had attained this high level. You'll see soon that it's obvious that the Maharal means that. Shehaya Ba'le Madrega, he reached a level, Asher Ein Sham Chiluk Klal, where there is no differentiation, there's no separation, there's no distinct places. L'kach pasa kol ha-mailos b'psia achas. And therefore he was able to, and therefore did, ascend all of the levels b'psia achas, in one step, in one fell swoop. Lo zo achar zo. He didn't go step after step, foot after foot, right foot, left foot. Sh'az hayadavik maila she'ish chiluk. Because if he had to climb step by step, that would imply that he was still at a level at which there was a chiluk of mekomos, there were separate spaces. V'chol davar she'ish chiluk. Anything which has differentiations, which has segments, which has separations, is geshem o koach b'geshem, is clearly physical. Avol Moshe hayadavik b'maila she'ein sham geshem. Moshe was clinging to a level. He had attained a level, he had reached a height where there was no physicality. There was no materialism. And because there was no materialism, everything was ki'ilu b'makom echad. Everything existed in one space. There was no spatial differentiation. There was no separation between items or places. Moshe Rabbeinu was able to equally access any space at any moment without really any necessary secondary movements or tertiary movements. He could take one step and reach wherever he wanted to reach. Now, obviously, on a level, what we're talking about here is something spiritual. Obviously, the Maharal, through Rashi, is referring to the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu attained a spiritual level at which the metaphysical worlds that he was ascending, that he was climbing, that he was partaking in, that he was growing through, they were attainable to him and they were able to be passed over by him in one fell swoop, at all the spiritual levels and all the spiritual worlds were accessible to him in one place, so to speak, metaphysically. But in a very literal way, what the pasuk is obviously referring to is me'arvos ma'av lahar nevo. And we are talking about physical space. And when Rashi comments that Moshe Rabbeinu ascended har nevo in one step, he's talking about Moshe Rabbeinu miraculously having a, so to speak, kvitzas haderech, jumping up the mountain, as it were, in one quick pace without having multiple spaces. And so what the Maharal then is teaching us through Rashi is that apparently when Moshe Rabbeinu reached this level of such heights, such spiritual heights, that physicality was no longer a real feature in his life, then space all became one to him. Spatially, everything became one space to him. There was achdus, there was unification of all the places in the world, and Moshe Rabbeinu could access the heights of Har Nevo in one step, the same way you and I could take one step to our left, to our right, or in front of us. Because when Moshe Rabbeinu reached this level of being so detached from Gashmius, being so detached from physicality, from materialism, all of a sudden the world as a physical entity didn't exist to him anymore. It was simply that he lived as this non-body, as this spiritual being in a physical world, and therefore he could move so freely and so quickly without having been bound to space in any real significant way. If you look in the second source here, the Chidushi Agados of the Maharal and Sota, we're going to come back to it in a second, but he basically spells out the same thing about the Madrega, the heights of Moshe Rabbeinu, that he became a Tzura. Maharal, we've spoken about these words in the past, but haven't spent too much time on it. The Maharal is constantly going to tell us all the time the difference between the concept of Tzura and Chomer. Tzura is the form of something, the idea of something. You know, think of like Plato's idea of a triangle. Whereas Chomer is the material, it's the physical embodiment of that idea. Moshe Rabbeinu was no longer Chomri. He wasn't Chomer. He wasn't a body anymore. He wasn't a person in the physical sense. He was a Tzura. He was an idea. He was a spiritual, metaphysical entity that happened to have been in a kli of a body, but he so transcended this physical world that he existed on the plane of metaphysicality, of spiritual nature, and therefore he was able to transcend, and he was also able to ascend without really taking the steps that it would be necessary for a physical person to take in order to climb a mountain. Hatsura, says the Maharal, lo teschalik. A tzura is shlema, it's full, it's the tachlis of the human being that Moshe Rabbeinu reached, and therefore he was able to ascend an entire mountain in one step. If you continue down, I quoted you for here the Gemara in Sota on Yud Gimel and Yud Dalet, where the Gemara has the famous ideas that Rashi brings to us. That Moshe Rabbeinu was buried in this valley, Be'eretz Moav, Mul Beis Pa'or. And the Gemara comments, it's interesting, Simen B'toch Simen. It says you have multiple signs over here. He was in a valley, he was he was Be'eretz Moav, he was opposite facing Beis Pa'or. So we have multiple markers for where Moshe Rabbeinu was. And yet, v'afilu hachi, lo yada ish es kvurasa. The Torah tells us that we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu was buried. And not only that, kvar shalcha b'malchus harisha, etzel gishtra shel beis pa'or, they once sent people to go look. Har'enu hechan Moshe kavur, where is Moshe buried? We have all the simanim, let's go look. Amdu lamal, they stood up high, nidma hem lamata, and it seemed like Moshe Rabbeinu's kavur was down low. Lamata, they stood down low. It looked like he was up high. So not only does the Torah tell us all the simanim, and we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu is, says the Torah, but even if you go to look for him, you won't find him. You'll see him, it'll appear like he's there, it'll appear like he's here, and everyone's going to be inaccurate, everyone's going to be wrong, no one's going to be able to find Moshe Rabbeinu's kever. What is going on in this Maimar Chazal? One of the major things that you have to know about the Maharal, this is something Rabbi Hartner stresses, and over and over again, is that one of the things the Maharal is always trying to do is he's trying to make sure that the agaditas that we learned in elementary school don't remain at that elementary school level. Meaning, Chazal say things that are fantastic, that are sometimes unbelievable, sometimes so incredible that we learn them when we're younger and we're blown away. We're kind of flabbergasted that Chazal would say such a thing. What a fascinating, wild, fantastic story. But then, like, if we're stuck in that level of being in a sixth grader, an eighth grader, a fourth grader, hearing the story, so the rest of our lives we have a elementary school understanding of Divrei Chazal. But Divrei Chazal are obviously deep. Agadita is obviously the deepest of the deep. And therefore, there's obviously layers of interpretation we have to uncover in order to have a mature understanding. So this Gemara, we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu is, the Torah says, we don't know where Moshe Rabbeinu is buried. The Gemara says, even if you look here, he'll look like he's there. You look here, he'll look like he's there. There's got to be something going on over here, not just some magic trick. There's got to be something deeper that we're being told by Chazal over here. So the Maharal, in the continuation of his commentary, you look here at the bottom of page number one, in his commentary on Masechta Sota, the Maharal says, duh, you should know. Kasher haya Moshe Rabbeinu b'chayav lefi madrigaso shahayalo. Here you see clearly the Maharal is talking about during his lifetime. Moshe Rabbeinu, during his lifetime, he reached a level, madrigas hatsura hanevdeles kemosher amazlu amala. He reached a level where he was a completely disassociated with physicality. He was completely detached from, he completely transcended this material physical world. He was atsura, form, without chomer. Tsura hanivdeles, a completely detached, separate form, an idea, a metaphysical person, as we've explained before now. Ukasher hayachai, when he was alive, hayula madregazos, he had this level. Ukasher nignaz, when he was buried, because he died, Oslo no da kvurashlo, then we couldn't find his kever. Why? Ki hakvura, burial, hi hagniza. That's putting something in its place for all eternity. It's putting something somewhere to be kept forever. Vizeu hefech midaso shel Moshe. To be confined to a space. A person in his lifetime, even a physical person on his level, is moving around. He's going from place to place. He's always in transit. When a person dies, he's Yavo al Makomo. He ends up in his place. What's his place? His kever. He's placed in his kever until, Tchias Amesim. He's placed in his kever and he's confined. He's stuck in that place for the rest of, time as we know it, before the Asad Lavo time period. So Moshe Rabbeinu, though, was different. Moshe Rabbeinu was not a physicality. He was not a physical body. He couldn't be confined to a place. He's an idea. He's a metaphysical entity. He's a spiritual being. And therefore, when Moshe Rabbeinu was buried, even though, of course, he had a guf, a body, and therefore it had to be buried, it had to be nignaz, it had to be placed somewhere. But if we knew where Moshe Rabbeinu's kever was, that would necessarily confine him to a specific place. Moshe Rabbeinu can't be confined to a specific place. He doesn't exist in the realm of physical, spatial planes. And therefore, when he died, he was buried because his body had to be buried. But it was in a way that we would never find it. We wouldn't know where it is. It wouldn't be understood how to locate it and how to really recognize it, because that would confine necessarily Moshe Rabbeinu to a space. And that's impossible, being that he's at Tzura Hanivdeles, as we've explained until now. That's an amazing thing. If you keep reading here, we're not going to read it inside, but the Maharal goes on to explain that a little bit more in depth, very beautifully, and has other applications for that as well. If you go to page number 2 in the Sefer Gvuras Hashem of the Maharal in the 24th parak, he gives another point from our Parsha and in general about Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu, being that he was a Tzura, we've mentioned this in the past as well, Chomer, material mass, matter. Matter is malleable, it's changeable. It goes from one form to another, one state to another. It travels, it moves. It's something which can be changed. A tzura, an idea, the form of something, is unchanging. It's steady. It's stubborn. It's not malleable. It's rigid. It stays like it is. And we spoke about how Klal Yisrael are considered the Atzura. They're more spiritual in nature, and therefore they're Am Kshe Oref. They're very stubborn. They're hard to change. It's hard for them to do tshuva. It's hard to convince them one way or the other to do something in terms of a negative, but it's also in terms of positive that they have a certain azus. That's the reason we actually receive the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu was the example of Tzura at the highest level. And therefore, says the Maharal, that accounts for the fact that Moshe Rabbeinu never had like ups and downs. His Nebuah never waned and waxed. He never had moments where he couldn't access Nebuah. He was completely consistent. He was always at the same level because he was a Tzura, because he was this metaphysical idea. He reached this highest level of spirituality and wasn't a Chomer, which was constantly changing and going up and down. But then he says, from our parsha, v'zeh sod in the bold at the end, right before number two, v'zeh sod mashe nemar, that's the secret behind what it says in our parsha, b'moshe, lo kasa einav, v'lo nas lecho. His eyes didn't go blind, he didn't lose his sight, and he didn't lose the moisture, vitality that was in his bodily function. Shemoshe nafsho lohayamut b'beguf, because Moshe's nefesh, his neshama, didn't exist in the physical world. Mibnei zeh lohayam mekabel chulsha, so he never weakened. He didn't deteriorate at the end of his life like a normal person. Shekol koach guf mekabel chulsha b'meshu mutba b'beguf. A person towards the end of his life, their body breaks down. It deteriorates because a person is a body. And as the person gets towards the end of his life, his body starts to lose its function. But Moshe Rabbeinu's body was so separate. This is amazing. So separate, so removed, so divorced, so detached from any reality of physicality, of materialism, that even as Moshe Rabbeinu reached the last moments of his life, he didn't slow down, he didn't dry up, he didn't wrinkle, he didn't lose his eyesight, his body didn't break down or deteriorate, because his body was spiritual. He was a Tzura, he wasn't a Chomer. And therefore, the same way that we can't find his burial place, and the same way his Nevuah never changed, and the same way as we started with, he was able to go from place to place, it's all for this same reason, that he wasn't confined to the physical world. And therefore, his body didn't break down, and therefore, he can't have a burial spot, and therefore, he can move freely between different levels, and even climb a mountain in one step, because physicality, the way we perceive it, is not going to be something that binds him, because he's a spiritual entity. Someone has reached such a high level that those are not things which confine him. Those are not the things which hold him back or slow him down in any way whatsoever. This is somewhat related to the second section that I want to discuss, but we know there just for a few moments now. In source number two, on the page number two, you have the pasuk earlier in the parsha. I think it's in the brachas of Yosef, if I'm not mistaken. The pasuk says, "Umimeged tfuos shamesh, umimeged geresh yirachim." So Rashi explains, "Geresh yirachim." The word "geresh" is from a lashon of gerishin, which we, you know, colloquially use for divorcing. Here, it doesn't mean divorcing as much as expelling. Like, you know, if you're megarish someone min haaretz, you expel them from the land. So here, geresh yirachim, it expels monthly by the moon. So Rashi explains, "Shaaretz megareshes motzia mechodesh lechodesh." The land expels its fruit monthly. What does that mean? The land expels its fruit monthly. So Rashi's referring to a fascinating, miraculous concept that occurs in Eretz Yisrael. If you look in the next source, the Gemara in Ksubas and Daf Kuf Yud Beis, the Gemara tells us that the Torah compares the Psukim compare Eretz Yisrael to Eretz Nachlas Tzvi. It's it's inheritance which is compared to a Tzvi, a deer. Why is Eretz Yisrael compared to a deer? So the Gemara offers one answer. Then in the bold, Matzvi ze kal mikol achayos, af Eretz Yisrael kala mikol haratzos levashos perosah. So this is just like a deer is extremely fast. It's quick on its feet. It moves very quickly. So too Eretz Yisrael is like a Tzvi, like a deer. It's the Eretz HaTzvi, in that it moves very quickly as well. It's very, very fast. What does it mean it's very fast? So the Gemara says it's very fast. Levashel es perosah. The fruits ripen very quickly. You and I in California, in New York, wherever we might be, we might plant an apple, and it'll take months until the apple grows and eventually ripens and is able to be plucked and eaten. But in Eretz Yisrael, there are fruits, there are vegetables, which will literally grow month to month. They'll grow for a month, they'll ripen, they'll come off the tree, and they just grow faster in Eretz Yisrael than they do anywhere else in the world, in Chutz La'aretz, outside of Eretz Yisrael. So that's what the Psukim are telling us. Geresh Yirachim, Rashi explained in the Pasuk, Geresh Yirachim, that the land of Eretz Yisrael is so quick to expel its fruits. Its fruits come into the ground and quickly, a month later, pushed out. They come right out and they are they're separated from the ground very quickly because they ripen so quickly, because Eretz Yisrael is like a tzvi and it moves very fast in that way. So the Maharal, in his commentary on that Gemara in Ksubis, says as follows: Ki kol asher hu baal geshem, you have it on the sheet over here, pe'ulos of be, I don't really know how to pronounce this word, be'ikva or be'akeva, but it means it works slowly, it's hindered, the process is slow. Ki kol asher hu baal geshem, anything which is extremely physical, which is very materialistic, pe'ulos of be'ikva, moves slowly. Ba'asher hu enu baal geshem, something which is not physical, kol kach, as much, hu yoser memaher, it moves more quickly. We see this in the real world. A person who is, or let's just not even say a person, an object which is very heavy moves more slowly. Partially because the other fact, which is that an object which is very heavy is pulled more strongly by gravity. Gravity pulls things which are lighter more weak, and things that are heavier in a more strong way. That's how gravity works. And obviously it takes more physical exertion to push a heavier object and get it out of its inertia of staying in one spot and move it along than it does to take something and which is lighter and transfer it to someplace else. Heaviness, weight, always results in a slowing down of the process. The truth is the Mesillas Yesharim makes this famous also in the beginning of his Sefer when he tells us that atzlus, someone who's lazy, is really a form of kvedus. It's a heaviness. A person is heavy, then they're stuck in one place. So something which has a weighty nature to it, it's very heavy. It moves more slowly. It's stuck in its place. It's not so easy to transfer to somewhere else. Ki advarim hanivdalim einam tachas hazman klal, says the Maharal, because a huge yisod, things which are separate from nature, things which are more kedusha-oriented, things which are more spiritual, less physical, they're lighter, and they're not bound by time. Meaning we're talking about here that people physically are harder to move, or an object is harder to move when it's heavier. But it's also true on a spiritual level that something which is more bound to Gashmius, it's heavier, quote-unquote, so it's harder for it to move spiritually as well. But something which is less bound, less tied to Gashmi, is less physical in nature, it can move more quickly in the spiritual sense as well. It can move very fast. Why? Because it's not under the bounds of time. It's not bound by the clock. It's above and beyond. It lives on a different plane than Zman, than time is. Says the Maharal, "Fikach amar ki Eretz Yisrael mitat kedushasa mimaharis levashal peroseha." So he says, unbelievable. He says, it's not that in Eretz Yisrael there's a better climate, or the geography is such that the land is better for, I don't know, for plants to grow faster, or some scientific explanation. He says the reason why plants grow faster, vegetables, fruits grow faster in Eretz Yisrael than they do in the rest of the world is for the exact same reason, he says, that we say avir ed Eretz Yisrael machkim, that being in Eretz Yisrael makes a person smarter. There's some wise air that's flowing through the skies in Eretz Yisrael. Because Eretz Yisrael is different. Because it's holy. It's kedusha. It's spiritual. It's less physical, Eretz Yisrael. And so Eretz Yisrael is not bound by time. The plants can grow faster. The fruits can grow faster because it's not under the civilis hazman. It's not bound by it's not caught up under the clock. It's not stuck in time. It can move much faster like a tzvi, like a deer. It moves quickly because it's lighter. So to Eretz Yisrael, which is lighter in the sense that it has less baggage. It's less tied down to physicality. It's more of a spiritual place. Therefore, it can produce its fruits much faster. This Maharal is part of the key to an incredible, just in general, idea that Maharal spells out in so many places, but something which is an amazing piece by Rav Huttner, you have it here on the source sheet in Pachad Yitzchak, in the very first one in Pesach, happens to be that people who learn Pachad Yitzchak, this is a more well-known piece. It's critical and also it's classic in its style. I just don't think people give it enough time to learn the entire thing through. Everyone knows that it talks about Zrizus and how that matters in terms of Yitzias Mitzrayim and Pesach, but really there's so much here in terms of Yesodos, foundational piece in terms of the Maharal. Maybe we'll just touch on one part of it in a second. The Rav Huttner starts by noting, again, we don't have time to really get into it, but it's worthwhile to look into, but he starts by noting that it's clear in Chazal, and it's clear also in the Maharal, that when we say the concept of Zrizus, of doing things with alacrity, doing mitzvos quickly, so to speak, he says the idea is not simply that we do things fast or we do things slow. There's two options. A person could do a mitzvah quickly or a person could do a mitzvah slowly. It's very clear that zrizus, working with alacrity, working with zrizus, means something more than that. And what he explains is basically that every person is a guf. They're a body, but they have a nefesh, a neshama, a soul inside of them that is not physical in any way whatsoever. And the mashal that we know is famous is that a person is basically living in a village. and the neshama is a prince or a bas, melech, a princess, and it comes to his body and lives there. And when you try to satisfy that princess, you try to give her things that will make her happy. So if you give her cholent and you give her, if you give her things from this world, it's not going to satisfy the neshama, because the neshama is from a spiritual world, from a world of kedusha. So only mitzvos and Torah and maisim tovim, those things can make a neshama soar, can make a neshama excited, can make a neshama content. But giving it food and giving it pleasures of this world just isn't meaningful. It's not their love language. It doesn't address the needs of the neshama that's in the body. So therefore, Rav Huttner explains, the neshama is always trying to transcend. It's always reaching out. It's like a fire that's burning up and kind of reaching for the sky. It's always going higher, and it's just bound by gufanius, by the physicality that a person has in this world. The more that a person releases his physical taivos, releases his bonds, and the way that he's bound to physicality, the more the neshama is able to soar, the more the neshama is able to please itself with spirituality, with transcending materialism. The highest form, now this is the part that's important, he quotes the Vilna Gaon for this, the highest form of created physicality is time, meaning time is something which doesn't have any tangible feel, it's not matter, it doesn't have mass, it's a concept in one sense, but it is a creation, it does only exist in our world, time doesn't exist outside of our world. So on the one hand, time is a creation. On the other hand, it's the least physical of all creation. It's like the height of all of creation in the sense that it's the least physical, it's the least material, because it can't touch it, you can't feel it. It's not real or tangible in the sense that we perceive most created things. So when a nefesh, when a neshama is trying to transcend this world and trying to break the bonds of physicality, when it reaches its peak, it's reasonable to assume that the peak of physicality, the highest form of physicality, at which point a person is on the border of breaking free into the spiritual world, is when a person is able to break through the bonds of time. When a person is able to transcend time, to live on a plane where time is not controlling them, where time doesn't hold them to anything, where they're not beholden to a clock, to a watch, whatsoever. That's what a neshama is constantly trying to do, break the bonds of time. And the Rav Huttner says that's what Zrizus really is. Zrizus presents itself as moving quickly. But in reality, what Zrizus represents is that a person's neshama is trying its hardest to accomplish an impossible task, which is to live in a world in which time doesn't exist. Time doesn't bind them. They're trying to, quote, beat the clock. They're trying to live in a world where the clock is dominated, is owned by the person, by their neshama. Not the other way around. We're not slaves to the clock, but rather we beat the clock. That's what Zrizus really is at its core. The way that expresses itself, the way a person actually acts on that, is they move quickly because they're trying to do things faster than time itself. They're trying to beat the clock. But the truth is that at its core, what Zrizus really is the neshama trying to transcend this world, exist in a fully spiritual way, which doesn't exist in the plane, in the realm of time itself, of Zman. That's what Zrizus really is. He says that's why Yetzias Mitzrayim had to be b'chipazon. Why did HaKadosh Baruch Hu have to rush us out of Mitzrayim? The point wasn't that we had to move fast. HaKadosh Baruch Hu could have done it slow. He could have done it faster. The point was that we had to leave Mitzrayim b'chipazon because Hashem was creating at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim, as we spoke about last week, the Jewish nation. The Jewish nation is Netzach Yisrael. Netzach Yisrael means we're eternal, but also that we exist above the plane of time. So in order to create a nation that exists above and beyond the plane of time, exists in a way that has nothing to do with time, that's a nation of Zrizim, who exist in a world that time doesn't bound them, doesn't hold them down. They are Netzach Yisrael, they're eternal in that way. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu had to create us through Yetzias Mitzrayim b'chipazon, in a way that was rush, in a way that was above and beyond time, because that was the starting point, the definitive starting point of our nation of Klal Yisrael. Says Rav Huttner, that's what Zrizus really is. That's why Zrizus is so critical in mitzvos, because mitzvos are our connection to the spiritual world and our connection to trying to transcend the physical world. And that's why our neshama, when it's doing a mitzvah, it pines to do it bezrizus. It wants to do it with alacrity because it's trying to transcend time. It's trying to beat the clock when it connects to a world in which there really are no clocks. And the truth is, that's what we were being told about Eretz Yisrael as well. Eretz Yisrael is spiritual. It's a holy land. It's kadosh. And since it's kadosh, it moves quickly. The peiros grow quickly. The vegetables grow quickly. Megid Yerush Yerachim. Gerashirachim. It moves very quickly. It spells the fruit very quickly because it's not bound by time. It's not tachas hazman, as the Maharal told us in the Chidush HaGadol. It exists in a different plane. And again, this is connected. We don't have time to get into it, but this is connected to what we spoke about earlier. That the same way Moshe Rabbeinu was able to totally transcend space, he didn't have a body that was bound to physical rules of nature, that it didn't deteriorate. His nevuah was constant as well. He didn't have a makom kvura because he couldn't be confined to one place. Because Moshe Rabbeinu was such a spiritual entity, he was a tzura. He existed in a world that wasn't bound to physicality, so he didn't have space. The same, the Maharal is telling us, is true about time. That a person who is able to detach himself more and more, and it's true in levels. We may not be Moshe Rabbeinu, but we could be the highest level of ourselves, where we detach ourselves more and more from Gashmius and involve ourselves more and more in Ruchnius, then we can transcend space, we can transcend time, and we can live in this world even on a plane of spirituality above and beyond what we perceived as an Olam HaGashmi. Everyone have a wonderful Shabbos and a wonderful Yontif, and B'siyat HaShemaya, I'm looking forward to picking up with Parshas Bereishis.